Clint Council and his wife Jessica were joyfully expecting a child when doctors told them Jessica had cancer. Chemo treatment could kill the baby. They faced a dilemma: treat mom or save the baby.
Bad things happen, and when those bad things happen, we may question God's goodness, but it's the way the bad things happen that make his goodness unquestionable.
Michelle Kingsfield likewise got a cancer diagnosis while pregnant. She too faced a daunting decision: who lives and who dies?
After that song and after that prayer group, I looked at my husband and I said, we're going to get through this. And I had, from that point on, a sense of peace.
This is a Life Issues radio special, a labor of love. All life is precious, and no one appreciates that fact more than our host, the executive director of Life Issues Institute, Brad Mattis.
There really are no words to describe my love for babies. I love holding them, kissing them, and even changing their diapers. My life's passion has long been to get married and have children. And since then, God has blessed me with 4 grown sons and 4 grandchildren. My passion for babies seamlessly translated into my career working for the pro-life movement, protecting those precious unborn babies and their parents from abortion, working to protect innocent human life from womb to tomb. So I can relate to the parents whose stories you're about to hear, what should have been one of the happiest moments of their lives, experiencing a pregnancy and looking forward to the birth of a baby, was not. Cancer struck both of them. They all share their heart-wrenching accounts of when a mother's life literally hangs in the balance.
Stay tuned for a half hour you won't forget as Life Issues presents A Labor of Love.
Michelle Kingsfield is a TV news anchor from Dayton, Ohio. She has 2 beautiful boys, but the journey to bring her youngest into this world was a struggle. After months of fertility complications, Michelle happily discovered she was pregnant for the second time in 2004. But growing lumps on her neck, increased by the pregnancy, led her to visit the doctor. After seeing several physicians, the consensus was Michelle didn't have cancer. 12 weeks into her pregnancy, the lumps were rapidly growing, and her doctor decided to do an ultrasound.
He said, Michelle, I just have some really bad news for you. He said, you have a rapidly expanding large cell lymphoma. He said, you're going to need chemotherapy right away, and I don't know what it means for your baby.
What was that like?
And I just started crying, and I just started holding my stomach and crying, my baby, and you know, I think it's a mother's instinct that we think about our children, and you know, I just had tried so hard to get pregnant with this baby, and I thought, this is a death sentence.
After multiple tests, Michelle was diagnosed with stage 4 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Her doctors were optimistic and gave her a 70% chance of survival, but her baby's future was still unknown.
We never really knew what the odds would be of the baby. So because I was 12 weeks, the perinatologist said, it all depends on your treatment. You may not have to terminate this pregnancy. I don't believe in abortion, and the thought of having to terminate this pregnancy to possibly save my life, I didn't want to have to make that decision. And thankfully, in the end, I didn't have to.
Michelle immediately began a chemo treatment known as CHOP therapy. Though the treatment was grueling, support from her family and the community helped Michelle through the process. She remained positive and hopeful about her baby's chances of survival.
At the time, they told me there were only 275 other women in this country who had had CHOP therapy while they were pregnant. And so they had followed some of them, and the main concerns were just premature delivery, low birth weight, growth restriction. And so I thought, you know what? That's kind of a risk that any parent has. And I thought, you know what? If that's the only risk, I can handle that. And I was just really determined that from the word go, I told my OB, I'm carrying this baby to term.
At what point through all of this did you first realize that you were going to survive?
I think I'd have to go back to my first chemotherapy. When I sat down and I felt the drugs and I felt like I had something that was combating it. I felt really good. But at that time, I still had this huge neck. And 2 weeks later, my neck was like it is now. And that's when I knew. I remember always doing stories and talking to people and always hearing from doctors that this positive attitude when you're sick really helps. And so I would always say, you know, I'm carrying this baby to term. This baby's gonna be fine. I'm gonna be okay. Everything's gonna be great. And then I remember thinking to myself sometimes, who are you kidding? You are lying to yourself. You are lying to everybody else to be so positive. But I knew that my other direction or the other road led nowhere. So I just kept saying it, believing it. And when I hit about 35 weeks, I thought, it's all good.
On April 27, 2005, after enduring 6 rounds of chemo, Michelle delivered a baby boy named Robert. The day was an emotional one and a testament to her faith that she and Robert would survive.
There's not a day that goes by that I don't look at him and think to myself, wow, you almost weren't here. And he's just such a charismatic boy, and he's so full of life and such a talker, and he's funny and he's unreal at the same time, and he's just amazing. Every child is such a gift, and he's just a double miracle to me.
At what point in your life did they tell you, Michelle, you're cancer free?
He was born in April, and so in May, right around Memorial Day, I had the PET scan, and they called me that afternoon and said I was cancer free.
You're listening to A Labor of Love, a Life Issues radio special with your host, Brad Mattis. And it's great to have Michelle Kingsfield in studio with us right now.
Michelle, well, it's good to get back together with you about a year and a half after we spoke.
Yes, it's fantastic to see you. Always a pleasure.
What's new in your life since then?
Wow, there's a lot new in my life, it seems. My children are growing up so quickly and are so fun. And I have said ever since they were born that this is the best age. So I've been saying that since they were born. So I guess this is the best age. They're 8 and 11. And now I also have a 12-year-old stepson. So it's a really nice blended family home, but it's wonderful.
A house of all boys. Huh?
Yes, I'm so outnumbered.
How are things with you with your health since we last spoke?
My health is great. I had a curable cancer, and I'm one of not a lot of lucky people out there who get such a thing. And that's why we fight all the time for fundraising efforts and things like that. But I stayed out of remission for a full 5 years. And if you do, with my particular type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, it's considered cured. I also was blessed with the fact that it was not a type of cancer that I would transfer to my children. Even though I was pregnant with Robert at the time, it's a defective gene that I was born with and does not transfer to him. So as far as my health goes, and what I went through when I was pregnant with Robert, the chances of me getting that type of cancer again are as just as much as it would be for anyone else.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really good news.
Yeah.
As a cancer survivor myself, Michelle, I relied a lot on faith. In the wake of the cancer experience itself and in the years to come and go on. How has faith been a part of your life since that ordeal?
Wow, I mean, faith has always been a part of my life. I don't think that you can really go through something like this without having some faith, but I think it takes it to a different level. And I do have my faith, and it is what got me through. It sustains us. I mean, everybody has to have that base of faith, I believe. And so when I was sick, of course, I always think to myself, okay, Lord, I feel like sometimes all I do is come to you with help. Please help me. Please help me do this. But I've always every night said thank you for what I have. And so I always think of my relationship with the Lord as the give and take, as it should be, but also going out and doing the things that, you know, he would want me to do. So when I got sick, it was actually a faith-based experience that in the very beginning made me feel that everything was going to be okay. I had been told one night that I had a chance of survival. The next day, I flew up to Dana-Farber Cancer Hospital, and my sister-in-law got together her prayer group. And this group of 10 women whom I'd never met drove about 45, 50 minutes to come up and just do a prayer group with me. Well, I had never done a prayer group just for myself, so I really didn't know what to expect, and I was feeling really sick that day. And these women just started praying with us, and, you know, just one after another. And this one woman was saying that she had overcome breast cancer and her husband had died of cancer. They had cancer at the same time. She survived, he did not. And she had this guitar and she said, "Can I sing this song?" And I said, "Oh my gosh, absolutely." So she starts to sing this song. And it was a song, Christian based. And it was at the end of that song that I knew that I had peace. And there's just a part of the song that I want to share with you, because it's the part that just made me say, you know, "Lord, this is all you. You have got to take me now because I can't do it." But the chorus is, "Please come to me. I can't even take one step. I need a place to fall and find some peace again." And after that song and after that prayer group, I looked at my husband and I said, "Is this going to be okay? We're going to get through this." And I had, from that point on, a sense of peace.
Is there anything, Michelle, you'd like to add that we haven't talked about?
When you do pray for someone and you don't get to meet them, like in my situation where I don't get to meet all the people that I pray for, I just want those people to know that it does matter, that you do feel it in some way. And it means so much, and you can't have it without your faith. And we need God to be walking with us and beside us and helping us. And sometimes He tests us, and we don't always pass those tests, and that's how we live and learn. When we do, we need to share, and I've been blessed to be able to share.
Well, being radio, people can't see you like I can sitting next to you, but you're the picture of health, and I'm so happy to see that.
you're
just look like a 10 in the health category. So I'm really glad to hear that things are going well.
Thank you.
Your family's doing fantastic.
They are.
And we hope that just continues for years to come.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
In September 2010, Clint Council and his wife Jessica were already the parents of a boy named Aiden when Jessica found out she was pregnant with her second child. But their happiness was soon derailed when Jessica complained of a sore throat. After 2 months of doctor visits and misdiagnoses, Jessica woke up unable to breathe and was rushed to the ER. In late November, she was diagnosed with a rare form of throat cancer. I sat down with Clint and Jessica's mother, Kathy, surrounded by the sight and sound of medical equipment, to hear their story.
What were your reactions, both of you, when you found out that horrific news?
I was a basket case. No. That's all I can say.
Pure and simple, yeah. Understandable.
When I first found out, I guess I didn't really believe it. In fact, I couldn't make myself say the word cancer. I'm a very optimistic person, so I always think the better, you know, the best. And my daughter was a tremendous inspiration to me. She was just the strongest woman I've ever known. I admired her, and I told her, I said, "You're a much stronger woman than I could." She was always, no, she was nothing, you know. She just thought she was just, but she was amazing. And it wasn't her. I mean, it was God's grace. That's what you saw. It was just His grace that anytime anybody came in that room, she always had a smile on her face. I don't care how tired she was. And that helped me, you know, to just see how she handled it so well.
Clint, when you finally got a lay of the land with her cancer, what was the game plan of the physicians?
The oncologist who saw her 2 days after we came into the hospital suggested chemo. She said, quote, "They're the two nastiest chemos that are out there. You will lose the baby." And she said there's a 15% chance they'll work, because Jessica had one of the most aggressive cancers you can have. So it didn't take Jessica long to tell them no.
Was there any time that you actually considered opting for an abortion?
Oh, an abortion? Absolutely not. She could never have lived with herself, because there would have always been that nagging in the back of her mind. What if I what if I didn't honor God? What if I disappointed him? What if he would have let both of us live had I chosen to not have the abortion? There would have always been that nagging in the back of her mind.
I understood completely. I wouldn't have wanted her to do any other thing. Like he said, she would have died had she harmed that baby. I mean, I would have given anything if it had been me. But I was so proud of her, and I'm still proud of her, because she lived out what she believed. And that baby came first.
On the evening of February 5, Jessica complained of a headache and slipped into a coma. The next morning, doctors chose to deliver Jessica's baby. Little Jessie was born weighing only 1 pound, 3 ounces.
She fell asleep at 9 o'clock that night. Jessie was taken out at 5 o'clock the next day. Technically, she was born at 25 weeks, but when she was taken out, the doctor said, she's not 25 weeks. She's more like 23 and a half to 24 weeks. And so they intubated her, put a tube down her throat to help her breathe. But she was surprisingly well off for being as small and as young as she was. When Jessica got to January 22nd, all the doctors were on board with getting the baby here. All of them. Radiologists and oncologists included. They were shocked. They, beyond words, they could not believe she got in there. We had doctors come into the room just weeping, crying, breaking down.
1 year later, baby Jessie is doing very well. She can't yet eat on her own and is still on a ventilator, but the doctors hope to take it out very soon. And the prognosis for her future looks better every day.
Clint, what was it like to see her for the first time?
I was in the delivery room. I knew that my wife was already gone by that point, but to see her for the first time was very, very mixed emotionally. That's such a hard question to answer, just because I knew that my nickname for her is bought with a price, because the price that I paid for her was very dear. But that's okay.
This is A Labor of Love, a Life Issues radio special with the Executive Director of Life Issues Institute, Brad Mattis. And now for an update, we have Clint and Kathy on the line with us.
Well, Clint, it's been about a year and a half since we spoke. So my first question is, how's Jessie doing and what has changed with her since we did get together?
She's doing extremely well. She wears something called a Pasimir valve over her trach. And what that allows her to do is breathe in through her trach, but she has to breathe out through her mouth and nose. So she wears that all the time. So she is kind of breathing on her own, but the next step is to put a cap on it, so she has to learn to breathe in through her mouth and nose, and that's a little more difficult. But she's not on a ventilator or any machine on a continual basis. She still eats through a feeding tube. However, she runs everywhere now, and she's started to talk and has done far above and beyond anyone's expectations.
So what is the prognosis for her now that she's come so far?
Just a matter of waiting now and daily growth, I guess. She just has to learn to breathe on her own, and then when she does, then they can consider what they call decannulation, which is taking the trach out, and she will then be completely self-sufficient regarding her breathing. And she is starting to eat a few foods by mouth, but still has difficulties, so the prognosis is another year to teach her how to eat.
And then with time, do you think she'll be just an average kid like the rest of them?
I don't know about like the rest of them. She's rather strong-willed, but yes, she'll be an average child, yeah.
Well, Kathy, I can't imagine losing a child. I have grown sons, and the thought of having one of them pass away, you know, causes heartache just thinking about it. Since we've spoken, has the level or weight of your grieving for your daughter changed in any way during this time?
Yes, I think it has changed. Of course, it will never go away, and I'm definitely not the same person that I was before this happened. I'd always considered myself to have a
you know, pretty strong relationship with the Lord, but something like this really brings you to your knees, so to speak, when you really find out if you really believe all these things you've been saying all these years. We're still on a journey. That's how I consider it. But he has brought so many amazing people into my life and brought my attention back to him in the area of Thanksgiving. A friend of mine sent me a book just right after this happened, called Ann Voskamp's book, actually. I can give her a plug. 1,000 Gifts. And that has been the start of a journey that I cannot begin to explain what a difference it's made, is learning to give thanks in all things, even the hard things. And it changes your perspective. I mean, you can, when those waves hit you, as they still do, if you can just focus on him and the gifts that he has given us and being thankful for what he gave us even during that hard time. You can look back and see them. When you're in the midst of it, you can't really see them as well.
What, Clint, do you think is the best quality that God has nurtured in you through all this?
What people would call agape love, but it's that volitional, self-sacrificial love where you hold nothing back and you get rid of yourself and just focus on those around you. So that characteristic has been what I wanted my entire life, my entire Christian life, but it never really began to develop until the quote-unquote bad thing started to happen. So those bad things did indeed teach me how to love more.
As years go on, Clint, and your kids look back on these years as adults, what do you want them to remember most or recall?
The goodness of God. Bad things happen, and when those bad things happen, we may question God's goodness, but it's the way the bad things happen that make his goodness unquestionable. And I want them to look back on these times and see how, because their dad was messed up so much, because he's completely human and makes mistakes all the time and sins all the time, I want them to look back and see God's goodness in making sure that we maintain a testimony of God's grace in all that we do and making sure that we love people. That's what I want them to remember, is God's goodness.
Is there anything, Kathy, that you'd like to add to our conversation that we haven't covered?
I'm very proud of my daughter and the stand that she took. And as I've said, we all believe that God is the giver of life, regardless. I know there are people that, you know, they believe in instances of rape or incest. But I'm thinking, you know, my daughter could have chosen a different path. But we believe that God is the giver of life. And she was a very strong woman, but still it goes back to God. God giving her the grace. God giving her the strength. It was not her. And so in all of this, yes, I'm very proud of my daughter, and I want her to be honored, but the glory goes to God. The glory goes to the Lord. He is the one that ultimately is responsible for all of it, the good, the bad, whatever. He is the ultimate one that is responsible, and that's the message I really want to get across.
It's been a special time on the phone with you today, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. Two very dramatic stories with two very different outcomes. One thing they did have in common, and that was their faith to see them through these difficult times. And they both bathed the situation in prayer, and they allowed God to guide them regarding their decision whether or not to have an abortion. Also, they had this in common. Both feel very thankful for what they were blessed with through the ordeal. They've grown spiritually, and they've grown closer in their relationship with the Lord. Plus, they've been able to witness the love of God in their lives by sharing their tragic experience to others. You know, and that's my prayer for you. I pray that because of you listening to this program, you too will grow closer in your relationship with Jesus Christ, and that you'll fully rely on him for all of your decisions. You know, I'm often asked, what do you say to somebody who's going through the grieving process? Or what do you say to somebody who's dying of cancer? What do you do when a person is suffering so horribly? So I've put together 25 simple and easy things you can do to help alleviate pain in people's lives. It's called help for those in pain, and it includes the appropriate Bible passages that just don't come to mind during those times. You know, I've always said that small acts of kindness mean a great deal to those who receive them, and that is so true with people in crisis and those who are grieving. I pray that this program helps you bless them. Thanks for listening.
To get the impactful resource, Help for Those in Pain, that Brad Mattis just mentioned, visit the Life Issues website at lifeissues.org, where you'll also find many other helpful pro-life news stories and resources. Again, just log on to lifeissues.org, look for the link, and request your free copy of Help for Those in Pain. And thanks again for listening to this Life Issues radio special, A Labor of Love.
Philippians, the words mind and think. And I think once the letter Philippians mentions the word remember, dictate our attitudes and the way we see life, the way we choose to express our emotions. And the entire letter of Philippians has taught me that circumstances and what other people do is not an excuse for not practicing joy.